two, three, four, five, six.
Ten, nine, eight, seven, six, five, four, three, two, one.
Yeah! Yes, we are on the air. 90.7 FM. WGXC, let me do the first, very first station ID. You are tuned to WGXC 90.7, servicing Accra, Catskill, and Hudson, Columbia and Greene County. Woo! Woo! Thank you, Mike.
Tune in every morning at 5 a.m., 7 a.m., and 9 a.m. for all the local news from the WGXC newsroom, from the Public News Service, from the River Newsroom's coronavirus report, to interviews from our partner station WOOC in Troy. You'll also hear the Better Weather from the Catskill Maker Syndicate every morning on the radio at WGXC 90.7 FM, your place on the dial for local news.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by the First Presbyterian Church of Hudson, a faith community open to all. Whether you are single, married, divorced, gay, wealthy, poor, or no habla inglés, if you are just browsing, just woke up, or just got out of jail, it doesn't matter if you work on Wall Street or if you sleep on Wall Street, you belong. We love soccer moms, crying babies, vegans, hipsters, seekers and doubters, tourists and locals. All are welcome. Services held Sunday mornings at 10:45 a.m. You can find us on the web at firstpreshudson.org.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Peter W. Bone of Gilboa, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
You're tuned to Radio Art, creative transmissions, sound experiments, noise, and more on WGXC 90.7 FM, Accra.
This is Radio Radio.
The performer works the audience.
In the radio.
On radio.
The artist works
the artist
his or her own body.
Works the body.
And what is being worked through is what
Roland Barthes
called the grain of the voice.
Roland Barthes speaks of as the grain of the voice.
And the grain is precisely that impurity
that gives rise
to individuality.
Impurity that gives rise to individuality.
It's a manifestation of the body in the voice.
The body in the voice.
And the body is always already an imperfect anatomy.
I'm Martin Spinelli on this installment of Radio Radio, voicing the visual with Bob Cobbing. Bob Cobbing has been on the edge of artistic, poetic, and acoustic innovation for some 50 years. Among his many collected works are voice prints from Amra Imprint and Gibbering His Wares from Object Permanence. He's also the co-editor of the recent sound text anthology, Word Score Utterance Choreography. So this is the first thing that I want to ask you about, Bob. Bob, what is this curious thing, the sound text?
Well, it's a text that can be sounded, and not just timidly sounded, but sounded with enthusiasm and gusto and movement and the whole body.
One of your better-known collections is really a primer of sound text. I'm thinking of ABC in Sound. Could you tell me a little bit about how you came up with ABC in Sound and perhaps give us a little example?
It happened at a time when I was teaching, and I came home for the Christmas holidays, and I had a very, very bad attack of flu with a very high temperature, and all sorts of strange sounds were going on in my head. And when I gradually got a bit better, I thought I must get some of these sounds down on paper and make something of them, and that's how the ABC sound started.
Adventure, aventure, aventureux, adventure, aventure, aventureuse, adventurous, à l'aventure, de la bonne aventure, aventurier, aventurière, aveugle, aveugle, à l'aveuglette. Bombast, bombast, bom, bom, bombast, bombast, en phase, en phase, bombast, en phase, bombast, Fibu. Crisot. Crisot, crisot, wrinkle stamen, wrinkle stamen, tac, 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 grontant, 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 tant, 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 tantère, tantère, plume de ma tante, tu dors, tout, tout. Adore, 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 toc, 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 to dore, to da da geeky da dai dai dido dago tete dai itchakushu da ja dai jobu dai joey dai kiyu dai kiyushi dai iri dai riki daiso dai sojo dai yoku dai udake daki shimeru daki tomeru damaraseru damarikumu dambo damukuro dampingu damu damudan dancho danchoko dango Dango, Danko, Danko, Densei, Densen, Danyaku, Danyubu, Darashiganai, Dare, Darioku, Dasaku, Dasen, Dasen, Dasu, Dasu, Dasumo, Dasuraku, Dede, Dabana, Dada Geiki, Daha, Dai, Dai, Dido, Dada Geiki, Dango, Danko, Dane. Eastender, extender, East India, hinderer, East wind, betwind, his syndicate, sanity, twixt and betweenity, first name, first dame, furtive, flirtatious, Eurasian, Asian, budentite, bevel, bigeminal, seminal, betulin, betterment, betumbled, lumbered, cumbered, custard, crisis, cripple, crisscross, cribble, cranium, crinoid, crinkle, crankle, crinkum, chasm, cataclasm, cataclysm, biblioclasm, biblioclast, biblioclept, biblioclectomania, bibliophagic, bibliophagist, bibliopagistical, bibliomaniac, bibliomaniac. Bibble, babble, bibitory.
by geminal, seminal, bitumen, bafflement, east ender, extender, east India, hinderer, east wind, betwinned, syndicate, sanity, flirtatious, Eurasian, Asian, budentite, level, the devil.
Frangipani, fanfaronada, plumeria rubra, ruby roo, gasconada, rudimentada, yasmin, jasmine, jessamine, jessamine. Fanfaronada, plumeria rubra, America rubric, tanya, rhoda, rita, rena, roma, rona, rosa, risa. Fanfaronada, frangipani, fanfaronada, ruby roo. Grin, 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 grim. Gay green, gray green, gangrene, ganglia, grin. Grin, grin.
How far can I push it? How far can I push the idea of what radio
What is? Can radio possibly
Nobody.
Be?
Nobody. Really complains today when
you've
I'm
got 3 hours, and once you have a show, you can do anything
last
that you want to do.
A half hour of people screaming straight.
Oh,
wall
you know, WFMU
wall,
encourages bad taste. You know, if it's in bad taste, we play
you can,
it.
You can edit this, right?
Bob, tell us a little bit about the structure of ABC in sound. How did you put it together? What are its constituent parts?
There's no real structure to it, except that it has a poem for each letter of the alphabet. In fact, I realized that the last three poems I'd written, one began with A, one began with B, and one began with C, so I just decided to continue. Well, I say there's no real structure to it. It's not quite true, because I think the H poem and the T poem are sort of pivotal points in the sequence. H is a bit of a worrying poem. It puts people on edge a bit. It makes them uncertain. Whereas the T poem, I think, is an attempt to get back to harmony and get back to a feeling of well-being. That's about the only structure there is to it.
I think of you as a poet and a performer with a very complex relationship to technology. And I'm thinking first of your duplicator poetry, where you seem to almost be fighting against the copying machine, trying to get it to do something that it doesn't want to do.
Yes, I think whatever machine I have used, I have really tried to misuse it, tried to make it do something which it's not intended to do. Which hasn't made me at all popular with either Gestetner or Canon, who hate the sort of things I do with their machines.
Have you gotten any feedback from Canon or from?
I tried to get Gestetner interested when I was working with the Mimeo machine, but they just said you can't do this sort of thing on our machines. And with Canon, again, I've had no real response from them, apart from the engineers who come from time to time, and some of those are quite interested in what I do. But I think Canon's idea would be the same. You don't do this sort of thing with our machines, you know.
As you were saying, you use machines in ways counter to the way in which they were designed. And I'm thinking about how difficult that has become these days, given the steps that computers have gone to try and reduce the amount of errors or mistakes that happen in writing. I'm thinking of recent developments in word processing technology, for example, where today's word processors will actually correct errors as you type, so that there's no opportunity to make mistakes.
Isn't there? there are always opportunities to subvert the machine, and I take every one of them, putting all the wrong buttons and giving the machine no time to think. That's the most important thing. You know, I try desperately to come up with the accident rather than the intention.
The visual morphing and the mistakes and the randomness that you've come up with in your duplicator art is really only half the process, though, half of your artistic process. For me, one of the most compelling aspects of your work is the acoustic aspect of it, where you take things on a page that have no immediate apparent relationship to a sound, and you render them audible. And I just want to describe one of the pieces of duplicator art that I have with me, and I'd like to get you to perform a little bit of it. It's a series of rectangles, of words upon words upon words, happening at different angles and overlapping each other to become almost black. Very few individual words are decipherable or recognizable on their own. In some sense, this is a very kind of almost alienating and off-putting work. But you you can animate these. How would you approach something like this?
During the heat of the violence of the day.
Is it a problem for you that someone else who would approach this text and attempt to render it acoustically might come up with something different? I mean, I think if I looked at this, my first impulse would be to try and kind of sound the words one on top of each other, like "Ute once when close to the head of the paper man using telephone." Something like that, where I would be trying to kind of find the words in and amongst the mess.
That's fine.
That's
great performance, yeah. Do some more.
Well, thank you. But I'm thinking of this in kind of I'm thinking of this in contradistinction to, say, musical scoring, where the idea behind musical scoring is that two musicians can take the same piece of paper and produce pretty much the same sounds.
I think the sounds produced from a piece of work like this will have a certain family resemblance, perhaps, but they will be very varied. I think my performance and the one you were doing just now were different. Now, they obviously came from the same piece of paper, I think.
There's a great Jaap Lonk piece called Lotedicht. That's a Man Ray poem, a vocal interpretation of a Man Ray poem, where it's a poem and all of the words have been crossed out so you can't read them. So Blanc interpreted that vocally as each line of each word that's crossed out, he went, "Aah!" And if it's a longer word, the "Aah!" will be longer. And if it's a short word, like a single letter, he'll go, "Aah!" And it's incredible. It lasts 9 minutes, and it's almost like Morse code. And it's vocal gymnastics by the end of it. His voice is going. It's just going. And he does another piece of Kurt Schwitter's called Brut, which means scream or roar. And for 9 minutes, he says Brut over and over and over again until his voice gets completely hoarse and he can no longer scream or roar. Now, it's off-putting completely. I mean, anybody who's listening. But it's fascinating to hear the gymnastics and the vocal gymnastics that this guy is going through. It's riveting. It's fascinating.
Bob, when I listen to you perform or listen to recordings of your work, I'm struck by resonances with a lot of early 20th century experiments in voice and sound. How do you think about yourself in terms of the history of sound poetry?
I don't. I've always worked on impulse and without any pre-existing theory about it, and I certainly have no sense of how I fit into the history of sound poetry, for instance. I've done every kind of sound poetry you can think of, probably, and it's up to anybody else to come along and tell me how I fit in. I hope I don't.
I'm thinking particularly of futurists like Marinetti, for example, who did similar things in sound, didn't he? I think of his poem Zwaum. Mm-hmm. Or would you say that you're not similar to that, or you're doing something completely different?
Part of me is similar to that, yes, and part of me is similar to Jack Kerouac's Old Angel Midnight, for instance. Part of me picks up on James Joyce. Part of me picks up on Gertrude Stein. You know, I mean, these are all influences. I suppose if you work very hard at it, you can find the influences behind any particular poem. But I think it would be a fairly futile exercise. Mm.
Another reason why I immediately leapt to Marinetti in thinking about you and the work you do is you seem to also share a kind of ideological resonance. Marinetti was very concerned with parole in libertà, words in freedom, yeah, which is something that I think you are also very concerned with freeing the word. What are you trying to free the word from?
From the page, I suppose, mainly. Poetry has been hung up on the page for too long, and one can use the page as notation, as a reminder of what you're going to do, but you've got to free the poem from the page, and as Henri Chopin says, take it onto the streets.
How do you see yourself as taking poetry onto the streets?
Or into the pubs or wherever, you know. But I mean, yes, I've done lots of open air performances. I've performed on the streets many times in my life, and it's always exciting to perform where there are other sounds going on, or in the middle of a middle of a park, in the middle of a thunderstorm, for instance. You start chanting away, and as the rain begins to ease up, first of all the children come and wonder what the hell's going on, and then the dogs come and start barking and joining in, and then gradually a few grown-ups will appear, and the whole thing takes off. The children begin to join in, they love the sound of it, and they take part. So, yes, it's a great experience to work in the open air, I think.
What was your most unique or most memorable performance experience?
Yugoslavia, 10 years ago. Huge crowd of people in the open air again, it was. But it was very rigidly organized, and the poet had to ascend a whole pile of stairs and go up and to a little pulpit right up there, a long way away from the audience. And my turn came, and I refused to go up the stairs to the pulpit up there. I started performing in among the audience and wove my way in among them, and shouted my head off and again got them joining in. And that was memorable. But it got me in very bad odour was the organisers, I'm afraid.
I
I think we are probably approaching this big problem. Is there a place for experiments on the radio?
Experimental
at all?
Radio, like most of the experimental arts, is often criticized as being alienating.
I think the radio in general but is an
isn't
ideal
that in fact part
medium
of the gist
to
of it?
Produce noise, yes. But if you ask me politically, I would say certainly not.
It seems as if one
I mean not
might well
not
think
even silence
of a Brechtian
arrived, you know, and silence is
effect
a
of
is a big
distanciation
since,
or an Achtodian effect of alienation.
And silence is something
part of the essence
people
of the experimental arts
you are really afraid of.
Why not
of,
also for experimental
like a
radiophony?
Mistake, you know? Something went wrong and everything goes silent.
One of the things that, one of the words that has occasionally been used to describe your work, your performance, is noise. Do you think that's accurate?
Oh, certainly it's noise, yes. It's somewhat organized noise, but noise is definitely the basic of it, I think, yes.
When most people think of the idea of noise, they think of something derogatory or pejorative, but for you it's certainly not, is it?
Not for me, but I think for a lot of people who hear me it might be, yes. I mean, certainly people have described my work as just a lot of old noise, and they prefer listening to cars starting up in the garage or whatever.
Do you have an example of one of your noisier compositions that you could play for us?
I'm sure I can find one for you, yes. Thank you. That was a version of Destruction in Art, which I did many, many years ago, somewhere about 1964, I think it was. And that was the version using mainly musical instruments or noise-making objects. There's a certain amount of voice in it, but not too much voice.
What was being used to make those noises?
It probably says something about it on the record here, I don't know. Yes, Hugh Metcalf was using guitar, live electronics, hi-hat, bass drum, where I was using percussion, but I think it was almost all invented percussion, things I've made up to bang and make noises out of.
So homemade instruments then, really?
I had a box with all sorts of things fastened onto it, which I could twang and bang and make noises with.
When I first heard something similar to that of yours many years ago now, my first reaction was a very anxious and upset reaction. I thought, what does this mean? This is utter nonsense. And I'm sure that's a reaction that you've heard before to your work. How do you respond to that?
I just carry on, and one hopes that the audience will gradually make sense of it and see there's a bit of fun in it too and enjoy it.
Do you compose with an audience in mind?
No.
Definitely not, then.
No.
So you
I compose with the piece in mind, making the sound piece, making the event. But I'm not concerned with audience, no.
Even though you're writing for the piece, even though you're only responsibility is to the particular poem or the particular performance. Sometimes you manage to incorporate audience reaction into that performance, though, don't you? So, what is your ideal relationship to an audience? You're not performing in your own bedroom. You're performing, as you said, in public. You're making recordings, so you must have some idea of an audience or some way of thinking about an audience or some way of incorporating an audience into what it is you're producing.
I think quite often that does happen, that the audience gets drawn into it, and on many occasions when I have performed, I have got the audience joining in and making sounds themselves, which they obviously enjoy doing and enjoy the piece more because they're joining in.
Do you ever want to communicate anything in any of your pieces? No.
No.
But with whom do you want to communicate your music if half of the audience is leaving? And I remember Heiner Goebbels sitting there saying, well, with the other half. And it was so kind of plain, of course. And it was this was since then it became a kind of like a slogan in my work. Of course, I always work with the other half.
You're listening to Bob Cobbing on Radio Radio. What I want to ask you is why there seems to be relatively little academic or critical writing about you and about your work. When I think of some of your other contemporaries, I think of Bob Creeley in the States, who has been writing for about as long as you have. Yet there seems to be volumes and volumes of academic critical writing about Robert Creeley, and he's in no way, shape, or form a mainstream poet. But the same can't be said of you. I've heard it suggested in a purely neutral way that your work just doesn't sustain the kind of academic analysis that some of your peers do. Do you think that's right?
No, I'm sure it could be taken apart and analyzed by academics if they put their mind to it. But actually, one person had. I mean, Eric Mottram has written quite a lot about my work. He's the only one I can think of who has thought about it extensively and written about it. And there have been other critical articles, mainly in very obscure places, so you're very unlikely to come across them.
So why the obscurity, though?
Well, this doesn't fit in. It's neither music nor art nor poetry. I went to the BBC once and tried to get them interested, and the poetry people turned it down, and the art people turned it down, and the music people turned it down, and they said, why don't you try anthropology?
Anthropology?
Yeah.
What was the logic behind that?
I don't know. It seemed a good idea at the time, and I have actually appeared on science programs, so it's easier to get my work accepted in the science community than it is in the art community, I'm afraid.
And why do you think that is?
Establishment in the arts world is very narrow-minded and is not prepared to accept experiments, whereas science is concerned with experiment, of course, and accepts it.
Do you have any compositional theory that guides the way you write or the way you perform?
I don't know. I just go back to what I was saying before, that I have no theory beforehand. If driven to it, I can come up with a theory after the event, but mainly it's a matter of trying things out to see what would happen if one opens one mouth just to see what will come out, for instance, and one bangs an instrument in a certain way to see what it sounds like, and it's that working without any preconceived notion of what's going to happen, which makes you free to come up with something which has never been done before.
Before we go, could you perform just one last piece for us?
Sure, yeah. There's a piece over there called Sound Piece for Uli, Uli Freer, who actually published it. And it's a variation on a theme. And it goes something like this.
That was Bob Cobbing performing Sound Poem for Uli, published under the title Uli's Set by Micro Brigade.
Thank you. You've been listening to Bob Cobbing on Radio Radio. Our music was composed and performed by George Bruner, and we had technical help from Franz Moore. Radio Radio is made possible by grants from the PSC CUNY Research Fund of the City University of New York, and with the support of the Department of Television and Radio and the Music Department at Brooklyn College. You can check us out on the web, where you'll find sound files of all our programs, as well as additional information about the artists we feature. Our URL is epc.buffalo.edu/sound. If you'd like to broadcast the series, or if you have any questions about anything you've heard, send us an email to msradio@banet.net. I'm the producer of Radio Radio, Martin Spinelli.
Hey.